When you get diagnosed with ALS, it's a traumatizing experience because you're told you have only so long to live, and you will spend your time completely trapped inside a body that doesn't move anymore.
That is the voice of a graffiti artist known to the world as Tempt One. Or rather, those are his words spoken through a machine that is reading his eye movements, the only movement he still has left. Tempt is totally paralyzed with ALS.
Imagine having a mind that is totally intact and can still feel everything such as heat, cold, pain and pleasure, but not being able to move or communicate for the rest of the time you're alive. That's a hard pill to swallow.
When I first met Tempt, he couldn't even communicate this much. He didn't even have a machine that he could talk through. What happened next sent him and me on a journey that I'll never forget. It's the story of how I found this idea of not impossible, or to be more precise, how the idea found me. My name is Mick Ebling, and this is Not Impossible, a podcast dedicated to a simple premise. What if you confronted something that everyone knew just could not be done? And what if you tried to do it anyway? This podcast is brought to you by Avnet, a company dedicated to helping creators of all types find whatever they need to get from idea to product and then get their product to market anywhere in the world. Okay, so I have this company called Not Impossible Labs, and here's how it all started. I didn't know anything about the world of graffiti. I think I was probably like a lot of people. I saw it around, I thought some of it was cool, I guess that a lot of it was gang-related, but I had no idea what that world was all about. Later on, we found out. By the 1990s, it had emerged as a legitimate art form, and Tempt, whose real name is Tony Kwan, was one of its most revered practitioners.
From my perspective, Tempt is the ultimate graffiti artist.
Hey! Hey, sir! Come here, man!
My wife Caskey would go on to make a documentary about Tempt called Getting Up, the Tempt One Story.
Tempt is an innovator in lots of aspects. I think he's put Los Angeles on the map.
These are some other graffiti artists talking about him in the film.
You can see his command of balance, symmetry, style, space, form through his tags, his pieces.
But I think he also has like the classical hip hop, like East Coast style, which he mastered.
His letters were gorgeous.
The artwork was usually based around the five letters of his name, sometimes rendered in big block letters, sometimes curved and tangled, but always bold, always colorful, always unique.
It's something that can't be tamed. It's wild and it's free in the very essence of the word freedom.
That's Tempt himself in the early 2000s, before he got sick, describing what graffiti art represents. He says it's about individual expression, and it's about community.
Graffiti is very communal. Artists feed off each other's work, you know? Graffiti, regardless of the issues, will stand on its own and keep going through time.
This right here. So fall 2007, we're invited to this graffiti art exhibit at a gallery. And I'm just blown away by all this artwork. But by far, the most amazing art in this exhibit is from Tempt. The five letters of his name, T-E-M-P-T, in this wild burst of colors, the letters crowding against each other, fighting to stay in the frame, jostling against each other like kids on the playground. And next to them, a black and white self-portrait. And he's smiling, but his face had drained of all color. And I think now about what he had said about graffiti. The fact that it's wild and it's free, and it's the very essence of the word freedom. And it occurs to me, freedom is the one thing that's been stolen from him. It's drained from his life. This disease, ALS, this nasty disease, had trapped him immobile for the rest of his life. And that painting still haunts me like it haunted me that night. Tempt, with all the color of the graffiti world stripped away from him. So it took me a while, about 6 months to be exact, but eventually I decided to take a big leap. I started by picking up the phone and calling Temp's father, Ron Kwan.
It's all about that one phone call that I almost did not pick up. Mick Ebeling was on the other end, who I did not know.
This is an excerpt from the film where he's talking about that call.
And Mick Ebeling had gone to the art show, the fundraiser art show, where 100 graffiti artists came together to do a fundraiser for Temp. He bought a nice piece, and he gave me this call. And he just felt that he wanted to do something more than just buy that one piece.
It's true. I did want to do more. But I couldn't believe the words that were coming out of my mouth. I told Ron, I'm going to find a way for Temp to communicate again. And even more, I promise that Temp will draw again. And when I hung up the phone, I sat back and thought, what the heck did I just commit to? Okay, a little background on Temp. He comes from a close-knit family in Los Angeles, a family that refers to themselves as Chino Latino, meaning his mom is Hispanic and his father is Chinese. He's very close to his younger brother, Steven, and to his crew, the Freeway Bombers, or FB, which is a small group of friends that will go out and do graffiti together. He never really got into the gang side of graffiti, using it to mark turf and whatnot. For him and the Freeway Bombers, it was always about the art. So now let me give you a little background on me. I was a producer. I came from the space of animation and design. So I did things, if this was a Jeopardy game, would be called things that come out of a computer for 500. I did things like the James Bond main title sequence and Stranger Than Fiction infographics and just things like that. So I had zero background in helping a paralyzed artist. No experience whatsoever at all in navigating the healthcare system or any of that. All I had was this feeling that I had to help this guy. I was overwhelmed by this feeling of possibility, of something way bigger and way more important than me. His family and friends were all making the same plea. We just want to talk to Temp again.
I have, you know, my health and my movement. Like, right, I can move of my own free will. And where I used to move through this world with, you know, a good friend beside me, now I move through this world with a good friend laying up in bed.
That's Temp's friend, Rogelio. He was by Temp's bedside a lot. They communicated in the most primitive fashion, through a letterboard, which means someone runs their finger along a card with the alphabet on it, and then when that someone comes to the right letter, Temp would blink. And then they would start again. Fingers across letters, blink, write the letter down. Fingers across letters, blink, write the letter down. It was painstaking and slow and awful. And if Temp blinked at the wrong time, or if the person running the letterboard didn't see Temp blink, it would throw the whole conversation off. Now, I knew there were machines that you could control with your eyes, things that I call a Stephen Hawking machine. Stephen Hawking used to communicate through a small sensor that was activated by a muscle in his cheek. So I thought, wait a second, if Stephen Hawking could do it, if these machines are out there, then why not just get something like that for Temp? How hard could that be? Really, really, really hard. It took months of annoying calls and emails and callbacks, but finally, we got lucky. We got a wonderful company to donate a machine called MyToby that, in theory, could track Temp's eye movements, the only movement that he still had left, and then translate that movement to a cursor moving across the screen. But the question was, would it work for someone as disabled as Temp?
It was adjusted to the proper height, the proper distance for Temp. Where it's seeing his eyes of this little track box so we know it's the correct position.
So a nurse and Temp's dad helped him set up the device in front of him and mounted it and adjusted it and got it all ready. And lo and behold, it worked.
Because there he could just, with his eyes, look at the keyboard on the screen and just start typing up the words on his own. And then the system would voice out his response.
Temp, with his eyes, now has the ability to control right mouse click, left mouse click, click and drag.
I was just completely flabbergasted that I was hearing this machine voice, and it was still Tempt. Like, yeah, audibly there was a disconnect for me, but I was still hearing the same person.
So Tempt and Rogelio, friends from high school, friends from growing up in the neighborhood, finally get to chat about everything and nothing, just like old times.
Eva has a kid now, a baby.
He is. She. Still. Back. East. Is she still back east?
Susan, yeah. Although they're thinking of moving back out here.
It was a moment they hadn't had for years.
We've also been able to email much more, or email, period. And I hear his voice in email. In other words, how he writes is kind of how he speaks. And I know the cadence of his words and his sense of humor. Like, all that stuff comes across. And yeah, he may not have his vocal cords and nothing, no sound may be coming out, but it's his voice nonetheless, and I hear that.
And soon, not only did Tempt's voice come through the machine, so did his indomitable spirit.
Even in a situation of seemingly no hope, a spark of creativity and beauty existed. Our writing culture was born of making something from nothing.
But getting Tempt to talk was one thing. Getting him to be able to draw again, we'll tackle that impossible quest after the break. Okay, let's face it. This is a podcast dedicated to technology for the sake of humanity, but it's also about the people behind that technology. If that's you, Avnet can help, no matter what you build. Why? Because they are the first company ever to offer true end-to-end solutions for product development in-house. That way, creators in any corner of the world can take an idea from prototype through to mass production. Are you a startup, an established OEM? Do you need help designing your product or organizing your workflow or just getting your stuff to market? Avnet's got your back. Your world is one that's always changing. That's why Avnet is here to help you reach further. And we want to give a special shout out to Avnet's engineering communities, Hackster and Element 14. They help creators vet and invent the technology of tomorrow. Want to do something more than just listen to this podcast? Maybe something like, I don't know, taking on the next non-impossible challenge? Go to podcastnotimpossible.com to find info for you and for anyone who wants to take their project one step further. Graffiti is in many ways about breaking rules. Rules about how to make art, where to make art. And so it attracts people with a rebel spirit. And that's who entered the scene next.
We understand what it means to our friends who write. You know, it's enough to get thrown in jail, risk their lives. And then we find out about this guy who he can't participate in all in the art form he loved. So, yeah, it's kind of the perfect way to culminate all our efforts on this project.
This is James Powderly, one of the founders of a group called Graffiti Research Labs. A bunch of hackers and programmers who see breaking rules as a guiding philosophy for incredible creativity. So just to give you a sense, one of the other founders, a guy by the name of Evan Roth, figured out a way to where if you Google badass motherfucker, his name is the first name that comes up in the search. No joke. And that was a couple years ago. And if you go out and try it right now, he's still like the third entry. But that's the kind of guys that we're talking about here. I knew they had the right spirit, but they also had the right technology. They had this thing called laser tag. And it basically is a huge projector that projects light on the side of buildings. And then with a laser pointer, you draw in that light. And the application registers the movement of that laser pointer as negative space. So it looks as if you are painting on the side of a building. It's like an etch-a-sketch. And they invented it. And these guys went crazy with this device. And they would put giant for sale signs on the Parthenon. People would draw hearts and I love you, Lisa. And of course, project paintings and pictures of giant penises on the sides of buildings and famous monuments. And why did they do this? because they could.
Graffiti never needed laser tag.
Evan Roth, AKA badass motherfucker.
Spray paint is what graffiti writers need, and that's the tool that they have and that they will never be able to top. But Tempt needs this project now. Like, this is something that's essential to him now.
So I flew all these guys to Los Angeles to my house, and my wife and kids and I moved out of our house. We pushed the couches and tables against the wall, and we just started to program to hack. It was a good old-fashioned hackathon.
This is prototype V4.
So this is just showing the eye switch.
Blue is up, and when I close my eye, red means that it's recording.
You can tell when we've worked on some because they don't have any lenses.
So if you can imagine a bunch of programmers and conspiracy theorists and rebels all together to try to create this thing, it was controlled chaos.
We might need to actually develop a completely different system that works much better for someone who is just working with their eyes.
Here's some kind of updates on the tracking. We have done some work to get a kind of tighter fit on the pupil. So the idea we have is to figure out where the eye is around the sphere, and then we can take that position and then remap it like a globe to a flat map.
Even my kids got in on the act.
Tell the camera what it is.
There's one eye right here and two eyes right here.
And what does it help you do?
Look.
By the end of the weekend, we had a working prototype of something that we called the Eye Writer. And it was ridiculously simple. It was a pair of cheap sunglasses that we had bought at the Venice Beach Boardwalk. It was two web cameras that we zip-tied to the front of two coat hangers that we duct-taped to the side of those sunglasses. And those web cameras were set up focusing back on the eyes to follow Temp's eye movements and track the pupil. And then we wrote some code that would translate those eye movements into the movement of a cursor on the screen. So then it was time for a test drive.
All right, guys. I want to make sure you guys can see Tony here.
So 10 of us are standing around Temp's hospital bed, including Temp's family.
So you'd look at the TV screen and you'd count down.
James Powderly is showing Temp how the device works. His eye movements send a cursor back and forth across the screen, drawing electronic lines and pictures. And then the blinking is the equivalent of the clicking of a mouse that lifts up and puts down the cursor so that you can start and stop a line.
So when it fades to gray and it fades to black, now you're starting to draw. So let's try that.
And Tempt puts the device on.
Does anyone mind if I get excited?
This is so amazing.
And slowly,
maybe a little, try blinking again.
But surely.
Okay, all right, let's try it. So let's try again.
A scraggly line appears, and then another, and the device is working. But that was just on a little computer screen. Tempt was used to drawing on a grand scale. So a few days later, we decided to take it to the streets. So we gained access to the used car parking lot across the street from Tempt's hospital room. All right, so by gaining access, I mean we broke in. The parking lot is filled with Temp's friends and family.
Hey, how we turn this on?
And we set up the projector and then a wireless connection from that projector back up to Temp's room on the fourth floor. He's wearing an eye writer and we're holding our breaths. And sure enough, Tempt started drawing.
Is he drawing his name?
Uh-huh. He's writing his name right now.
It was crude, and it was rough, and it was beautiful. The laser lines started to appear, forming letters on the side of the building. T-E-M-P-T. Tempt was back.
We're gonna go see this wall right here. This guy made it happen. He actually did.
Temp's dad, just like everyone else, was filled with this palpable energy of pure joy that Tempt was doing what he always wanted to do, what he was born to do, what he was meant to do. And he was doing it after it had been ripped away from him by ALS. And I can't even describe how it felt to us to be there and to witness this.
That was the first time I've drawn anything since 2003. It feels like taking a breath after being held underwater for 5 minutes. I'm gonna take a couple of more stabs at it before catching some Z's. If I wasn't so tired, I'd have spent all day goofing around tagging.
But the excitement of the night was short-lived. The limitations of the iWriter proved to be tougher than we thought.
It's extremely difficult to control the line with my eyes, as well as ending the line. Even with all the practice I've had, it's still next to impossible for me to bust a little more than the most rudimentary scrawl, which is frustrating because I was hoping to have rocked you some fly styles by now.
I asked everyone and their brother for help on making the machine better. Finally, some engineers at Dell agreed to help us take it to the next level, and we were all incredibly excited the day they showed up in Temp's room with a prototype of iWriter 2.0.
So, Tony, this is Drew from Dell. He's one of the team of, like, 40 people,
Hi.
I guess.
Hi.
He's, like, one of 40 people over at Dell that have been cranking at this thing.
Drew. Hi, Tony.
So he's gonna take us through a bunch of the prototypes they've been working on.
So this one is basically a pair of Oakley ski goggles, actually ski glasses. They have a nice rubber grippy to help support the bridge and not slip too much. Believe it or not, you mount it on the top of your head and it basically pivots down and shoots from the top.
Ha. Ha.
He's laughing at you.
Yeah, I know. Is he laughing at the way I look or the fact that I said I'm not sure it's going to work right? But
it didn't work. And pretty soon after that, Dell dropped out of the project altogether. But I couldn't give up because Tempt, he wouldn't give up.
I got angry and decided that if I had to go down, I wasn't going without a fight.
So while we're getting nowhere on creating an improved iWriter, Tempt is making incredible strides using the original one. Every week he's sending us new drawings where he made one that's more beautiful than the next, and we don't know where this is leading, but we're about to find out.
It actually came to me in a dream, believe it or not, because before that, I had completed the sketch, but to me it's not anything exceptional. It's just your standard graffiti lettering. And for a week after I did it, I was racking my brain trying to think of how to really make something different. But everything I thought of was cheesy and lame. But one night that just came in a dream. Actually, the dream was the inspiration and gave me like 12 versions of how to do it. So now I've got a ton of ideas to fall back on.
And one of those ideas would take graffiti to a new dimension. Literally.
One side of the M is more forward than the other, and notice the P is at another angle, etc. So it gives the whole piece a sense of movement or being jumbled around.
He was drawing a model for a 3D graffiti sculpture.
Playing here, we could turn the M at an angle this way.
And his friends agreed to help him build it.
T at an angle in like that, so we're not all on the same plane.
Totally.
Cool, yeah, we can do that, definitely.
It was an amazing sculpture. It was 4 feet high and the letters of his name swirling and twisting and turning around each other. It was astounding that he was even able to not only conceive of it, but to draw it. And he did it using his eyes. His eyes were the things that made it a reality. And he was able to direct his friends to help build it through our Stephen Hawking machine. And not only did he get it built, and not only was it beautiful and incredible.
This right here is a piece. Wow.
How did the hell you do it?
But it went on display at the Pasadena Museum of California Art.
I've never seen anything of his in person before. And I saw it and it blew me away.
That sculpture was a bold metaphor for the statement that I'm still here. It feels great to be a working artist again. Creating relevant work. The sculpture reminds us that we can't wait around for governments, politicians, and corporations to change. That it's up to us, at the human level, to live the changes we want to see happen.
Live the changes we want to see happen. So I guess that's where we'll leave Temp's story for now. But that's really where the not impossible story begins. Temp's story is the foundation of not impossible. There's a simple idea that we live. It's called commit and then figure it out. Think about that. Think about if there's something that you want to do but can't figure out how to get there. What if you promised someone that you would do something, even if you had no concept in the world of how you'd follow up on that promise? That's the question that started this entire thing. We learned so much from that experience. One was the power of beautiful, limitless naivete. We had so many people tell us over and over again that if we had any clue how hard it was to do what we did, we never would have done it in the first place. We didn't know enough not to try. Beautiful, limitless naivete. Since that point, it's become one of our guiding principles. And the second principle that we learned was this concept of help one, help many. We don't set out to change the world by solving the massive problem and starting at that level. We set out to help one guy with ALS. One guy to paint again. But as a result of that, helping that one person paint again, we came up with a device that helped people all over the world be able to communicate. It's now part of the permanent collection at the Museum of Modern Art. And it started with one person. And more importantly, we learned to never take impossible for an answer. Just think of something in your life that seems unachievable, unimaginable, and tell yourself, maybe it's just not possible right now. It's not impossible forever. So that's our Not Impossible podcast for today. Thanks again to our sponsor, Avnet, a company that provides true end-to-end technology solutions to help people who make anything, anywhere in the world, reach further. And I want to invite you to check out their communities, Hackster, the world's fastest growing developer community for learning, programming, and building hardware, and Element 14, the biggest designer engineer community on the planet. You can find links to their websites on ours. Go to podcastnotimpossible.com to find info for you and for anyone who wants to take their project one step further. And a special challenge to those communities: we know you like to make things. Well, if you want to try to make your own iWriter or help us make ours better, there are links on our website to get you started. That's our podcast for today. A special thanks to the brilliant and beautiful director of the award-winning documentary, Getting Up, The Tempt One Story, who, as I mentioned, also happens to be my beautiful wife, Kasky Ebling. Our senior producer for this episode was Jocelyn Frank, our development director, Aaron Sullivan. Joe Babarski is our director of partnerships. Barking Owl Studios did our final mix. Vicky Shirer, our associate producer. Huge thanks to the team at Not Impossible. And our executive producers are Phil Lerman and me. I'm Mick Ebling. Thanks for listening to Not Impossible. And until next time, remember, commit and then figure it out. Sounds crazy, right? Maybe. But it's not impossible.